Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Comedy Arcade, part friendly panel show, part vicious competition, where contestants fight with their best anecdotes on mystery topics generated through a trusty bingo ball. I'm Viv Slayton, host of the show, spirit of the bingo balls, and games master. Points will be awarded for originality, amusement value, and my general caprice and mood on the day. The contestant with the most points at the end of the game wins, but their opponents will be granted a few cheat codes along the way, just to keep it interesting.
So he got the wisecracking Yorick, and you got the non-wisecracking Yorick.
Come on, Tim, let's get through the intros. Let's.
Oh, anyway,
also, over your other shoulder, you've got various Russian presidents or whatever they are, leaders.
This is not a great listening experience.
Yeah.
This is a podcast. This is for audio. So yes. All the things
just play some Russian music.
Not the best. It is the first episode recording of 2022, everybody.
Woohoo! Hooray!
And we've brought back the amazing sports extraordinaire Kelly Wells. How are you doing, Kelly? How's the start of your year?
It's brilliant. I mean, we've got Novak Djokovic, we've got Prince Andrew. I'm having a brilliant time. This is going to be my year.
Yeah, the news agenda is, there's reasons to be cheerful in it, isn't there?
There's a lot. Lovely Boris. Yeah. It's all going marvellously.
Yeah.
I like the idea that the story of Prince Andrew makes it your year.
Yeah.
Oh, just beautiful. I've been waiting for this to happen for so long.
His Royal Highness. No.
No longer.
Doesn't get to hate for H anymore.
I love the way that the Daily Mail have instantly started to make sure that they just refer to him as Andrew.
And then Andrew,
who used to be
really enjoying themselves. We have the amazing, funny woman, Rachel Krieger.
Hello.
Hi. The last time I saw you, I was trying a visual joke at the Funny Women semi-finals that did not land. So I just had elf ears on for 6 minutes and nobody heard the line as to why and no one questioned it. So that was...
To be supportive, I think it would be terrible if during the heats we actually intervened when someone's joke doesn't land. I'm so sorry. Imagine a compere running on the stage mid-set and going, I'm so sorry. One of the things the audience hasn't understood is, do you mind just explaining? I think it would be bad form in comedy.
I think they missed that. I think something went with the connection fix. Do you want to do that again? Because you didn't get what you deserved. I have had an MC interrupt sets like that. Not mine, but I've seen it done. Mm. Open mic in is fun. The brilliant Tim Fitzheim, who has played before, because you played 2 or 3 games at Edinburgh Fringe with us. But I don't think you've ever been on the official podcast. So
wow.
It's the first time.
I did a very early one, didn't I? I think as well in this format with the faces on the screen format.
Yes, at Mark Watson's,
I liked it.
24-hour online marathon show.
That's so, right. That's right. We were all very tired.
So tired. It was a long day and night, and I was drinking at 11 a.m. So welcome to the show, Rachel.
Is anyone not tired? I just want to ask because all the time. I mean, that wouldn't be a standout memory.
Sometimes I wake up refreshed and I'm confused about what is this feeling. The birds are singing, nothing.
Oh, that's so 2019.
So we have got categories to get through. Everybody, in theory, knows the rules.
Roughly.
Yeah.
Got them in front of me in case there's any issues.
Oh, you've already earned some points on that, Rachel, because how the scoring works is I just score based on what I like best. So,
so just recap. So you pick a ball, it says something, then someone says something, and then there's some points, and then that's that.
Then
that,
another
that's
ball.
That's it, isn't it?
Yes. So
Tim nails it again.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Okay.
Points for you, Tim. Points for you.
And what
well.
Was the, what's, is there wild card? There's a, what, is that still a thing?
No, because nobody ever read my email. So I just did away with those rules, to be honest. Kelly's
I read your email.
You guys.
Oh.
I've got what them. Was,
well, there you are.
I don't understand them, but I've got them.
Well, anyway, the first category is embarrassing injuries. Who wants to talk about that?
There's definitely nothing in my history that could lead me to that. Apart from one thing, I might have one thing.
Go on.
Yeah, okay. So, as we've already ascertained, I live in the countryside. I don't know if any of you were brought up in the countryside or if you or whatever, but it's kind of like a different upbringing. You get used to falling out of things and learning to milk cows and stuff like that. All really transferable stuff. So I really, really got into living in the country for the first couple of years, and I moved into my parents' old house. So all my dad's old tools were in his shed. Okay. My dad wasn't a man that used to look after his tools. So they were all rusty and broken. But I thought, since we needed some kindling wood for the house, I thought he'd be really proud of me if I went out into the garden, got this big lump of wood, and I chopped it into kindling for my family, and I carried it all into the house. I think it was winter, the scene was set. So I found his hand axe, fine, never used an axe before. And honestly, I can't tell you what a beautiful feeling it was to swing the axe, break the wood, took a bit of kindling in, carried on doing it for a bit, got a bit enthusiastic, went for a big, and the axe head came off the end of the handle. Because it was really rusty and the wood was rotten, and it hit me in the forehead.
Oh my God. Oh,
no. And I was about 20. Luckily, not the blade end. It was the hard end. Otherwise, this story could have ended really differently. But I went into the house and I had a lump on my head that was about 6 inches out from my face. But I was fine. Do you see? Because I live in the countryside. I'm a country girl. You get hit in the face with an axe. No problem.
Right. But I mean, that sounds like an episode of Casualty.
Yeah, I my life is basically...
Or Emmerdale. Be an Emmerdale farm.
Emmerdale. Have we had any terrorist attacks recently? I don't think so, but I will keep you updated in future.
Okay. Let us know. We'll follow you on Twitter.
Yeah, so, thanks, mate.
Axe to the face, no consequence whatsoever?
Just a big lump on my face and a really good story to tell on podcasts.
Lovely, yeah.
Yeah, nice. I mean, maybe it had to be there, I don't know, but it really hurt. Oh. Top line, didn't read. Yeah, it really hurt.
I mean, this isn't my story, but a close friend of mine, he grew up in the countryside proper. I grew up in Essex country-ish, and he grew up properly on a farm. And he told me once about his dad had an accident with a combine harvester involving quite deep cuts to the hand, and he just put a bit of duct tape on it and finished the field, because that's how they work.
My dad? that could have been my dad.
It was quite amazing. I have met the dad, and he's exactly as you'd imagine. But I had an embarrassing accident, little one. When I was about, must have been about 12 or 13, and I was away at summer camp with my friends, and we were sort of young and stupid, and it was late, and we'd had like midnight feasts and stuff and been up late, and we were so overtired that everything made us giggle. Do you know what I mean? Whatever, the stupidest thing made us giggle. And one of the boys at dinner, we were sitting around the table, one of the boys at dinner told a really terrible joke, not a funny joke, a terrible joke. So overtired, I was laughing so much, I fell off my chair and broke my arm. I literally fell off my chair laughing, and not even at a good joke, and broke my arm. Had to be taken to hospital to have it put in, and they didn't want to put it in a plaster cast because they said it might still swell. I'd have to come back a couple of days later for the plaster cast. So they put it in like a half a cast, so not even like a cool thing everyone could sign or whatever. And I missed, and I'm still upset about it now, a number of years later, was that night. It was, I think, the penultimate night. We were going to the beach for like a big bonfire, toasted marshmallows, all of that stuff. Didn't get to do any of that. By the time I'd finished at the hostel, having not even a good cast, we drove past that bit of the beach. They'd all gone back already, missed it all. And then, and it was the summer holidays. So I had my cast put on after camp had finished and didn't even get to like go to school or do anything where anyone could sign it. I had a mouldy, boring cast.
And now there's a mediocre man on the stand-up circuit talking about the time he was so funny, a woman broke her arm.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't go in stand-up, and I think that's probably good for all of us in so many so many ways. But yeah, that's my traumatic.
Not getting a proper cast is a real letdown.
Yeah,
I know, seriously.
I would have been crushed.
One that's just covered in gauze and you can't get
the bottom half. Yeah. I mean, it just shows how much detail I remember it in is how I'm still so annoyed about it. It was a fiberglass bottom and then sort of cotton wool and gauze on the top. And it was just like, naff, you couldn't do anything. I mean, even a Sharpie would have been hard pressed to sign that. It was awful.
Oh, I once had two full proper plaster casts on both my legs because my tendons are too short.
Because of course you did.
They had to extend my Achilles tendons, which is not, that was not fun. But the upshot of that was when the cast came off after 6 weeks, I was a 10-year-old girl with the hairy legs of a grown-up male football player. So lines and lines of regimented hair had been allowed to grow in the warm, dark conditions under the plaster cast. And my mum had this idea in her head that you shouldn't shave like your legs or like facial hair as a woman or any trace of moustache because it will grow back thicker. So she maintained this despite me being this child yeti, age 10.
Was she trying to sell you or something? Was she trying to like exhibit you?
You've got a career, Vix. She's going, Vix, you've got a career in circus. You've got a career in circus.
This is the greatest show. Show them, Vix. Show them. But yeah, so that was... Is that funny? Is that trauma? That's the beauty of comedy. You don't know.
Deep trauma. That is deep trauma.
I don't know. I mean, I think there are definitely people that have made a career out of it. There are definitely circus acts that have gone on the road with that.
I wish I could have made a career out of it.
Yeah.
It just feels like, you know.
I have injured myself quite a lot doing comedy over the years. And, you know, I think I've broken ribs, shoulders, feet, legs, hand. I remember the hand one. That was a disaster. So I broke my hand and they had to put metal in it to build it back together again. So I can't. Wow. I still can't grip things very well. But it wasn't that painful when they sort of put the metal in the hand. But because previous to that, I like the person you said earlier had gaffer taped my own hand back together. So I was wandering around with a gaffer taped hand, and the doctor finally went, "You can't. That's not the way this is going to get better. It's not going to help." So they put loads of metal in my hand, and I went to stay with a friend, and some of the metal fell out of my hand. So she came back into the room to find me pushing metal back in my own hand to try and like keep all the bones in the right, like to keep all the bones in the right place. And she was like, "What are you doing? What are you?" And I went, "Oh, I think the metal's fallen out." And she was like, "I've got to go to work. Just come to work with me." Now, luckily at this point, it turns out she was a doctor. So she basically took me to work with her and basically then admitted me to her hospital as a patient to put my hand back together. But she then said, like, I couldn't go into general admissions because I wasn't a resident of that area. So she admitted me as like to her bit of the hospital. So I then had my hand like with metal half hanging out, and I was like sitting there and trying to ram bits back in. And then she said, "Right, just sit in my waiting room of my bit and I'll come and sort it all out and it'll be fine." And I was sort of sitting there, and it was at that moment that I realised that she's a maternity doctor. So I'm sitting in what was a maternity wing of a hospital with like really heavily pregnant women giving birth with definite husbands with them as a single man who's like got claws coming out of his hand, like on my own, just in obvious, like for no reason. I didn't, there was no reason for me to be there. I was slightly nervous looking, very heavily pregnant women going, why are you here? And where's your wife or other person
a
giving birth?
The presence going, in the maternity unit.
It sounds like Freddy Krueger.
Well, the thing is, all the best I could come up with was like, I went to stay with the doctor and she's come to deliver your baby. I'm just a house guest. But something happened in the night, which is why I'm here. And I don't want anyone to worry. And so it was all just really awkward. And then I heard her on the phone to the actual hand doctor who had tried to put my hand back together going, yeah, I know. Yeah, no, I've known him. And it was just, it was all just cringingly embarrassing as I sat there trying not to, you know, off put any childbirth with my very painful hand. And at the end, what they ended up doing, which is what I'd said all along, is essentially gaffer taping my hand back together and sending me back to the hand doctor. So I arrived back at the hand doctor, who's the one who said, you can't gaffer tape your hand back together, with me going, you see, this is what's just happened. You've just gaffer taped it back together. So there's a horrible circularity about that whole series of disasters.
You bested him, Tim.
Did it actually happen, or was this a really protracted episode of Beagles about?
No, that did actually all happen.
Like, if I was sitting in a hospital, maternity wards, which I have been in my life, so this is from experience, and there was a man with metal claws gradually emerging from his hands, telling me that he came here with the doctor, I would be looking for a TARDIS. That would be what would happen.
Yeah. As Tim's twirling his moustache with his good hand.
Yeah, big scarf.
Go along with your business. Don't mind me.
All a bit of a disaster. That was a shocker.
The question is then, is there anything that gaffer tape can't repair?
No, I mean, I used to live in a shack on stilts, and most of that was held together with gaffer tape.
Yeah, I mean, my whole house is held together.
Tell me more about that.
What now?
Yeah. I kept gaffer taping it back together, but then I did lose somebody when they came to visit once because they came up the staircase and I hadn't obviously gaffer taped it together quite like strong enough. They were a bit heavier than me and they got to the top of the stairs and just went and like disappeared and their head kind of went, wah, and they just disappeared. And all I could see was like the top of their head. It was all a bit of a disaster.
And they were never seen again.
I was gonna say, did you find them?
They didn't come to visit again. I'm going to tell you that. They didn't come back. I kept
just
saying,
occasionally,
come back,
after dark, if you walk up those stairs, a metal hand just
That's before my metal hand. That was prior to that.
So you claim, though. So you claim.
15 minutes, one category. All right.
But it was quality.
It was all gold. Right. Actually,
that shack on stilts, I remember, was the one where I didn't have any running water, so I had to catch my own water. So I was living abroad and there was no plumbing. And so I was catching my water and then I was funneling it into a big water tank. And the cows kept trying to steal it. So there was this increasing roar between me and the cows. Trying to steal the water. And cows, as it turns out, are surprisingly dexterous. So first of all, I put a tap on this thing and then the cows worked out how to turn the tap on and nick the
Amazing.
Water. Then I put a little like lock thing on the tap and the cows worked out how to disable the lock and then nick the water. So then I put barbed wire around the lock, like put barbed wire round the tap, round the lock. And the cows worked out how to take off the barbed wire, unlock the tap and nick the water. So it was like, it's like one of those, I was living in a Far Side cartoon. That's what was happening.
I feel like they were getting some help from someone with fingers and thumbs, though. Surely they were.
No, they were very dexterous.
Did you resolve
How were they with gaffer tape?
I was going to say, did you get the gaffer tape involved to solve the
Yeah, I should have done that.
Gaffer tape.
Yeah, I should have done
gaffer
that.
Gaffer tape the cows up. And then see if they can do it. No,
yeah.
Maybe not.
Annoying.
The category is encounters with famous people. I'm scared.
I've got a weird thing about that because I don't know if this would be my like definitive encounter with a famous person, but I was flying for my show, An Insomniac's Guide to Ambulances, many years ago. So I think it must have been about 2012 or 2013, which feels like ancient history now. And it was on in a little theatre in the West End, I've just shown off. And I was handing out flyers in front of the Ivy, the restaurant, the Ivy, because I thought that'd be good to get some celebs in. And Derren Brown walked towards me with like a couple of people. And I wasn't sure what to do because I'm a bit scared of him because I think he might actually be magic. So I didn't know, do I hand him a flyer or not? What happens if our hands meet? And anyway, in the end, I spoke to him briefly, I think, because who knows, it was Derren Brown. I gave him a flyer, our fingers did touch. And to this day, I'm not 100% sure whether everything that's happened since then is some kind of dream. And I'm actually in a hypnotic state in central London, being hypnotized by Derren Brown. And I'm probably just now sitting on a couch in front of the Ivy, eating an onion like it was an apple, singing in a language I don't speak and all that stuff. Like, I don't know. So a little bit of me wonders if that encounter with Derren Brown, because it's very unlikely that I'd end up becoming a professional stand-up for any number of reasons. So it does seem quite surreal and imaginary.
I mean, I love that. Do you know, I've got one of those. It's not a celebrity encounter, but a white witch put a curse on me once.
What?
Yeah, it's complicated. And seriously, though, and I've always wondered whether like the things that have happened to me in my life are because of that or not. But how do you
What's the difference between a white witch and a witch?
And a normal witch.
Like, what is
if
the
good witch and bad witch? Putting curse on people, that's not nice. That's not a nice thing.
White witches are normally meant to be like nice ones, but yeah. The one in Narnia wasn't.
This one had gone a bit feral.
Got a bit feral.
Grey. Yeah. She's more of a grey witch.
Shades of grey.
I did piss her off. And I did hear that she put a curse on me. But no, as far as I can recall, they can put.
I mean, like, how did you annoy her? What was this a taxi ride that went wrong,
or do you feel it was justified, the curse?
No, I think to be fair, it was probably justified. I was only 17, and I'd accidentally gone out with her friend's boyfriend.
Accidentally, do you trip and fall and find yourself having pasta? What happened?
Well. Sort of, but I was only 17 at the time and he was older.
Okay.
So I'm using the power of Me Too to say it wasn't entirely my fault, but I was very into it. So yeah, so that's what can happen to you if you nick other people's boyfriends' kids.
But what was the curse and did it work?
We don't know.
Well, it's hard to tell because if you get a curse put on you by like a Satanist, I think you probably like get eaten by a sheep or something, don't you? So like it's kind of obvious that you've been cursed. But if a white witch puts a curse on you, it's like, oh, I've just got my foot wet when I've stepped out the front door or something like that, because they have the power isn't there. So I don't know. I'm just really hapless. So I figure out that, you know, I've just developed this clumsiness because of her and I'm going to die in a really embarrassing way.
Yeah, I think I will. I don't have the energy of a natural causes death about me.
No. It's like, have you seen that medieval death bot on Twitter?
No.
Like every single thing, like you if you tag them in, like you've had an accident or something, they'll tell you how you're going to die. And every single one of those, like getting hit around the back of the head with a ducking stool or something, it's just so on brand.
Your own axe.
My own axe. Or a white witch brandishing an axe. I don't know.
Have you met any famous people though? Let's bring it back round.
Fair play, mate. That was really good. I haven't met that many famous people.
Because you're cursed to be.
Because I'm cursed not to meet any. Yeah.
No glamorous touch of Derren Brown.
But my friend Jenny, when I was about 13 or 14, was a huge fan of athletics, oddly. And she had a massive crush on a javelin thrower called Steve Backley. Right. Does anyone remember Steve Backley?
No.
Yes, he was an Olympic guy, wasn't he? Didn't he do the Olympic javelin? Yeah.
Yeah, he Google was him. Very famous. Yeah, and yeah. Is very he old.
He was famous in the 80s or something, wasn't he? Or thereabouts.
Early 90s.
Early 90s, yeah.
He's got great hair.
Mid-90s.
He's got great hair.
Always had really good hair, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, so she had this crush on him and she used to go to all these athletics events and her dream was to meet Steve Backley and have a picture taken with him. And she went off to an athletics meet that he was going to be at. She was really excited. I didn't go with her. And this was before texting and everything. So when she got back, she rang me and said, oh, my God, you're not going to believe it. I met Steve Backley. He was lovely. He was really nice to me. And I had my picture taken with him. Brilliant. So we had to wait for 3 or 4 days for photos to be developed. And she came around to my house after she'd done it. We're there. This is the moment of her life. Open the envelope with the photos in it. Find the ones. And there's the photo of Jenny, right, who on her best day is a solid 5 foot. And there's Steve Backley, who I checked earlier on, 6'4". So you've got a lovely photo of Steve Backley looking all handsome with his big hair, all this. And then you've got Jenny's head. She was wearing a red cap, just about hip height. So looked a little offish. No sign of her face whatsoever. She never met him again. And that picture is up in her house.
Oh, that's gorgeous.
That's so
She's a legend.
She knew she was there.
Look, that is me, all right?
Well, that's the whole point of it, isn't it? The whole point of photos with a celebrity was meant to be to commemorate a moment where you met them and connected with them. Whereas now it's just people wanting selfies to say they've had them and you don't get any kind of chats.
There's a whole story. She was so happy. And I think she had... To cap it all off, she took a banner saying, go on, Linford, because she loved Linford Christie, but she spelled his name wrong and it was on the telly. She never really got it right.
Thank God Twitter didn't exist then.
I'd have ruined her, I'm telling you.
It's that weird... It is that weird phenomenon, isn't it, of people who were famous in the, let's say, early 90s seem to be still kind of, you know, weirdly famous now, whereas, you know... People, is it just that there is it your age? Is it that you hit them at that time in your life, and that then, or is it just because there are only four channels or three previously? Is that what made them more famous? I'm not quite clear on why that is.
But like that, doesn't it? Yeah. Like, because when I was growing up, you didn't have like children's TV channels or anything. You literally had to watch whatever was on the telly in the school holidays, which is why I grew up like at 8 or 9 years old. I loved Laverne and Shirley.
Well, it's a great show.
Obviously it's a great show, and it's got the best opening credits that have ever been made.
And a brilliant song.
And a great song. And a brilliant song, which we'll recreate later today and put on the internet. But yeah, I think you just have this real fondness, because when you're a kid, everything's so lovely, isn't it? And you just kind of, it was better then. But I'm starting to feel like, you know, my mum going on about the Beatles when I was really small and stuff. And she's like, oh, shut up about the 90s.
Also, because people were more accessible, because they couldn't, you know, they didn't have like entourages so much and whatever. I remember hearing, is it Julia Donaldson who wrote The Gruffalo, talking about when she was young, she had a massive crush on, I want to say Mick Jagger, but I could be incorrect, but she could just like, you can find their phone number in the phone directory and like stalk their house. Whereas now it takes a while of Googling to find people.
You can get there if you put the work in, but it's a little bit more effort. I looked up all of the Nicholas Joneses on the electoral register in my local library when I was 14 to try and find Nicky Wire's house. And we managed to triangulate it to an area that we knew he lived in, because he lived in a small village. And we found a Jones in that area and we went there. But because we were 14-year-olds, we obviously wouldn't ring the bell. So we just went all the way to this obscure village in South Wales, sat outside possibly his house all afternoon, making noise in case he came out and just discovered us. Like, oh, my God, look at you, Nicky Wire. Let's talk about Hoovers. And... yeah.
I was going to say, did you listen out for the sound of
Hoovering? I'll always remember, I've got a photograph of me all dressed in my 14-year-old best, because, you know, I thought I was going to meet Nicky Wire and he was going to fall in love with me and that would all be fine and normal. And, just standing by the road sign to his possible street. And I still have that photo. I'm like your mate. So I just keep telling these weird stories about Nicky Wire, because there were a lot of them. I sent him makeup in the post.
Right.
By his agent, because I thought that would be a thing. I was quite sad. I was a lonely teenager.
That's sweet.
Yeah, we all were.
It is.
But I managed to enlist two mates to this mission who weren't Mannix fans. They just thought it would be a laugh. So that was the power.
Oh, he's the Manic Street Preachers guy. Yeah.
The power.
I've watched the rugby with him.
I took two mates to the library, gave them administrative tasks to do, and they did it. Then I went, get on this bus to Aberbeek, and they did that as well.
Aberbeek.
Aberbeek. There were no buses. Yeah,
I've watched it in Aberbeek. I've watched the rugby with him in Wales.
Oh, so you just
with him, like with him.
You just know him.
Yeah. We stood next to each other.
Don't tell him that story, for Christ's sake.
Yeah. Do tell him that story and film it.
Yeah, because I can't remember all the ins and outs of it, but basically a mate of mine knew this guy and he was called Nigel No Thumbs. And basically my mate said to me, we'll go to Wales. He's a Welsh guy. He's a great friend. And he said, we'll go to Wales. We'll go to the Arms Park. We'll watch the rugby with my mate Nigel. It's absolutely great. So I get to Cardiff. I was coming from somewhere up north. He's coming from, I think, London. And I went, well, where is this Nigel? He went, Nigel No Thumbs. He went, well, you'll know him because he's got no thumbs. And I went, okay. The thing was that this was a busy pub in downtown central Cardiff on a rugby match day. So I basically ended up going around the pub going, hey, and like putting two thumbs up at people. And see which person would like put no thumbs back. And then I could work out which one Nigel No Thumbs was. And so basically I found Nigel No Thumbs in this pub. And he was how do you know who I was?
Process of elimination.
By the process of putting two thumbs up and him like putting no thumbs up. And then he went, how do you know who I was? And I went, it's just a hunch. And so we then go to the rugby match where it turns out
did
that
he
Ms.
not
Nigel,
know his name was No Thumbs?
I can't remember that. I don't know if he did know that. So we then go to the rugby match where, so it's me, not my mate, who still hasn't arrived by this stage, Nigel No Thumbs, and two mates of his called Di, one of who was called Di the Milk, right? And I said to him, why are you called Di the Milk? And he said, well, that's because I used to deliver the milk, but I don't do that now. And I went, what do you do now? And he went, oh, I know, I'm a plumber. And I went, right, so why don't they call you Di the Plumber? And he went, well, because it's already Di the Plumber, so I can't change. So, like, because he delivered the milk when he was 13, the name had stuck for his entire adult life. So me, Di the Milk, Di the Bread, and Nigel No Thumbs go to the Arms Park, where it turns out Nigel has somehow got a box or access to a box. So we go into this box, and we're standing there in the box, and JPR Williams and JJR Williams, who are two of the best Welsh rugby players in the history of rugby, I would say, and not just Welsh rugby, just general rugby playing absolute legends, turn up, and they're in the box with us. So I'm just a bit floored by that. And at the point the Manic Street Preachers come in, I don't really care at that point, because ultimately I'm standing next to two of the greatest rugby players in the history of rugby. And they're basically as impressed with the rugby players as I am. And then we get to the point where we sing the Welsh National Anthem. So I sang the Welsh National Anthem in the box with the Manics. I remember that actually happened.
Great celeb story.
Yeah. But it's celeb stories are weird, aren't they? Because we work with a lot of people who are quite well known in our jobs. Yeah. You constantly are like warming up for somebody or introducing some band or whoever happens to be, and I think they're quite special moments. I think also, especially if and when people like die. I was lucky enough to play, I ended up playing crazy golf with Patrick Swayze, and that was
what?
A very special time.
How did that come about?
You wasted our time with that rugby story.
Patrick Swayze.
Oh, come on. How can you place Nigel No Thumbs above anyone? I mean, come on. That
Patrick
man's a
Swayze,
legend.
He choreographed the whole of Dirty Dancing and sang that song.
And was a really genuinely nice man, in my own experience of him. A really lovely man. Yeah.
Did you win or did he win?
I don't know if we were taking it that seriously or competitively. I think we were just enjoying laughing with each other. He was just a very nice man. So, yeah, we went round a crazy golf course together, which was nice.
Do you have to be known? Do you have to be on a list or something to get invited to be in a celebrity golf tournament?
Well, it wasn't really golf. It was crazy golf. So it was like mini golf.
Yeah, I know, but I'm just thinking like pro-am, stuff like that. Can you just...
I'm sure there must be a list. What is it? Victoria Wood said comedians divided into two. They're essentially depressives or people who wear funny trousers and play golf. And I think that's such a good division of comedians.
I could do all that, though. I wear great trousers and I can't play golf. So
stand-up comedy.
And I'm not really a comedian.
That didn't stop me.
Can I posit another celebrity encounter?
Go on. Mm-hmm. I'll let you.
Is it Hamlet?
Not on this occasion. Well, I don't know. He might have played Hamlet at some point. When I was a teenager, I was almost definitely truanting from school because that was default. And I went up to the West End. I nearly said that in proper Essex. So I went up the West End and I was wandering down the street. And ahead of me, I saw an old guy who I thought was the geezer who sits behind my grandfather in synagogue. He looked very familiar. And he had that sort of look at me. He was in a raincoat. He had a look about him. Anyway, so I thought, oh, if I don't say hello, my granddad would be very angry. So, I went up to him and I said, he didn't look very keen to see me. I said, hello. He sort of said, hello. And I said, how are you doing? And he said, you're fine. We had like sort of very small chat. And then I heard someone cough very loudly and someone say, will you please get out of the way? And I turned around. And I was so oblivious. There's a whole crowd of people, like a semicircle of people that guy wasn't the old man who sat behind my grandfather in synagogue. It was the actor George Cole from Minder, and he was standing in front of the branch of the Leeds Building Society where he was filming an advert. He used to do these adverts laughing all the way to the Leeds, and I strolled into the set full of Essex confidence, and I wanted to make sure that come Sabbath he was still like on good terms with my grandfather, so it was important.
And how did that work out for you?
Yeah, not well. Yeah. Not well. And actually, the next time I went to my grandparents and went to their synagogue, I thought, no, that guy doesn't look like Minder at all, actually, sits behind him. But yeah, true story.
Yeah, well, there we are. You were almost in an advert. That's what I took from that.
Beautiful. Yeah, I mean, it's on my, obviously, it's TV credits on my comedy CV. Yeah.
You were there. Was there a pull quote you could have got?
Yeah. Equity card.
Would you please get out of the way?
Get her out now.
There's also there's also something about comedians that, do you know what I mean? That comedians that you really love that you get to see or work with. And again, I think it's the ones that are just not with us anymore that are just really, you know, I loved Peter Ustinov. I love Peter Ustinov. He's fantastic. And so meeting him was just brilliant. And I still look back on that and I still think he was, and actually we used to write to each other. And Nigel Hawthorne was another one who played Sir Humphrey. And again, he was someone that I really admired and I just really felt lucky to have time with him. He was great. So there's Eric Sykes, what's not to, you know, Eric Sykes was a phenomenon. And and spending time with him was the story I love about Sykes. And I know this is true because he told me, is basically Eric had his hearing aids put in his glasses. So he didn't have to wear glasses and hearing aids. They were one and the same thing. And so what he used to say is, I'm sorry, I can't hear you. I've not got my glasses on. Which is such a good line, but actually true. And what Eric used to do at the end of rehearsals, if the director had kind of been going on a bit, he just used to take his glasses off, fold them up, stick them in his lap, and then he couldn't see or hear. So he was like, at that point, they just keep going on as much as they want to. I've finished this for the day. It's such a, he was, so I adored him. And actually the one that you've just reminded me of in this chat is when I was a tiny kid, I used to play the trumpet and I was watching one of my all-time favourite entertainers who's also a trumpet player. And I was at the back and I was completely, I mean, as a tiny kid and I was completely gobsmacked. And I was next to this really nice lady who was really cheerful and lovely and kind. And I was just, she could see like my eyes were out on stalks and I was just utterly, you know, blown away. And at the end, she said, do you like this guy? And I said, yeah, really do. I play the trumpet as well. And, you know, blah, 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 tiny little face going, blah, blah, blah. And she went, well, let's go and see if we can see him. Come with me. And this lovely woman took me to see what then turned out to be her husband, who obviously was Roy Castle, who was one of my absolute, like, all time, you know. So for me, a little trumpet playing kid who kind of loved entertainment and was utterly, you know, blindsided by Roy Castle, that was pretty special.
Yeah. Vix, are we allowed to give points as well? Because, like, he's got my points yeah. now.
Beautiful. This is beautiful.
Yeah, I think it's difficult to underestimate or overestimate how important Roy Castle was in the 1980s yeah. and what a big deal he was.
Yeah, that's but also wicked. Let's not forget that the person that introduced Roy Castle to that lovely lady, his wife, was Eric Morecambe.
No way.
So it just keeps beautiful. Getting better. Wow. Yeah. So she was a dancer on the Morecambe and Wise show. And Eric basically brought her into Roy Castle's dressing room. This is the story. And just went, good evening, and did the glasses thing. And just went, she thinks you're rather a catch. Good evening. And then left the dressing room. And that was how he introduced them. That was like it. And then they ended up married forever. You know, fantastically. Yes.
That's the best story I've ever heard.
Yeah. On the subject of Morecambe Wise, I saw Tom Turk, who is Comedy Arcade's sidekick. He doesn't record with me anymore because he's too busy being brilliant. The show is insane. The Play What I Write. It's touring now, listeners. If you can see, you should. I was so proud. I was like sat in the audience. Yeah. I was like, that's my friend.
Yeah.
It's excellent.
It's the 20th anniversary tour, which I went to see as well. And it's just brilliant. And if they're still on tour, the Play What I Wrote, the 20th anniversary tour with Tom Tuck is absolutely super. And I saw the original one in the West End 20 years previously. And the night I was there, it was they have a celebrity guest every night, don't they? And that someone comes on and there's a wonderful part where they do that. But every night they say, oh, we're meant to have Ian McKellen, but he can't make it. And that's the joke. It's an old Morecambe and Wise joke, basically. And the night I saw it, the special guest was Denise Van Outen. But at the end, when they were taking a bow, at the back of the stage, a tramp weaved onto the stage at the back. Kind of broken through the pass door and was weaving around in a Macintosh, and they were at the front of the stage bowing. And then the tramp came forward and you suddenly went, that's Ian McKellen. And it was, he was obviously drunk, and he had a plastic bag, a paper bag with a bottle in it. And he was swigging this bottle and he started speaking about why he was late for the thing. And then his speech carried on going. And then he suddenly was slurring slightly less. And then he just went, and that is why I am here this evening to present the Olivier Award for the. And he reached into the paper bag and pulled out the Olivier Award, which he then gave. And I was like, standing there going, oh my word, this can't happen every night. This is amazing. And then they said, they were on stage and they said, well, we didn't write most of this. A lot of this is Morecambe and Wise, which was written by Eddie Braben. And then someone came on stage and said, Eddie's here. And Eddie Braben came on stage, the guy that wrote Morecambe. I was just, again,
did
in
you
total
touch Darren Brown?
It was just incredible. So, but afterwards, after the show, I'd booked a little table in a restaurant for me and my mate that were there. We were walking down the side of the theatre and
guess who you met next? Don't say anything, let's all guess.
Norma Farnes. Now, Norma Farnes was Spike Milligan's agent, Eric Sykes' agent, and Eddie Braben's agent. And at the time, Norma was thinking about maybe trying to take on a new person, and she was wondering about me. And so she said, Tim. And I said, oh, hi. And she said, have you met Eddie Braben? And I was just standing there going, no. And so Eddie Braben, the man that wrote Morecambe and Wise, was standing there. And I was obviously completely dumbstruck, like in a Roy Castle level dumbstruck. And Eddie then saw that he was being very nice. And he just saw that I was like clutching a programme. And he just went, shall I sign that for you? And I went, yeah. So he signed the programme. I then was like, just after I'd said goodbye, I was walking off, but just in an actual state of shock. At which point I bumped into Ian McKellen, who then went, oh, right. So you want me to sign the programme? So in the programme, he wrote the play What I Was Not In and signed it Ian McKellen. And apparently, according to him, he only ever signed one. So the only programme he's ever signed is this one that I had in my hand. So then I walk a little bit further down the alleyway at the side of the theatre, and I see the guys that wrote the play, who I knew from Edinburgh, who used to be in a sketch show called The Right Size. And Toby Jones was in the original as well, the wonderful actor. He was in the original show. And so they then said, and I was just trying to explain what just happened. And they were just laughing at my total stammery, complete shock. And they were like, well, where are you going now? And I went, well, I booked a table in there. And they went, we've booked a table in there. So then that me, The Right Size, Toby Jones and Denise Van Outen all sat down and had supper together after they just won an Olivier Award the same night. I think genuinely it's one of my most like extraordinary nights at the theatre ever, evenings ever. It was amazing.
Yeah.
It the same witch that cursed me and you got all the good sort of stuff? I definitely think that might be what that is.
That was incredible. A lovely night.
We're going to go out one day.
I think we all should.
It was really fun. It's just so magical, that show, the play what I wrote, because that's the opening of the second half. Don't want to ruin it for anyone. But the second that second half opens, it's magical. And if you're like me and love Morecambe and Wise, that first five minutes of that second half is just unforgettable. And I've seen it, as I say, 20 years apart, and it's golden. It's a lovely show.
Well, just to show my comparative experience, after I saw the play what I wrote, I met Tom Tuck in a pub we'd pre-arranged to be at, and we ended up absolutely drunk as balls in a walkabout bar in Birmingham.
Oh, mate.
Nice.
Did I have as good a time? I expect so, but yeah, puts my experience in the shade. But
lovely. Tom's doing so well. It's so good.
I'm so proud of him. Right, on the subject of things to be proud of, we have reached the end of the game. Sadly, we've run out of time.
We've only done one round.
I know, we've done two rounds. It's a new record.
Man, made it to two.
You made it.
Is that better than last time? That seems better than last time.
I think so. Yeah. Okay. Edinburgh was basically just one long category of us all interjecting into Tim's brilliant, highly convoluted story about getting arrested, but we haven't got time for that. We need to go around and tell all the listeners, while I do the points maths, where we can find you. Kelly Wells, where can we find you? What are you working on? What can you plug?
I'm in the middle of projects, actually. You can find me on Twitter at Kelly Wells. For the last year, I've been working with Amanda Palmer on a podcast project that is on ice at the minute because she's still trapped in New Zealand, blah, 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 blah. So the Big Mick Energy podcast that I'm going to be doing with fabulous comedian Sam White. Who's been on the show and was brilliant. That should be out in the next couple of weeks. I know I've been promising this for years, but yes, it's going to happen.
Tim, what about you? What are you doing with your life at the moment?
I'm on Twitter at Tim Fitzheim and actually now on Instagram. That's very exciting, isn't it? I've gone on that because I don't think people were quite believing of my nettle soup recipes. So I've gone on to try and spread the love of the nettle soup and other things, but there is some nettle soup based content there.
Can't wait to see
on
it.
Instagram.
Oh, I'm straight there.
And I'm also, so what am I doing? There is a podcast coming out soon that I'm doing with John Hastings, which is very exciting. And that's going to be called The Tale of Two Selbies. And that will be out very shortly. Get that to wherever apparently podcasts are. And then I'm also the creative director of the UK's oldest working theatre at the moment as well. So there's quite a lot of projects going on.
Just a bit busy.
Which is in King's Lynn, I should say, in East Anglia.
Amazing.
Go see it. It's very old.
If we're there.
First performance, 14:45, which is, it feels like a long time.
Yeah, 2:45.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's when we started this, isn't it?
Yeah, about 100 years ago. Many years have passed. Rachel, what about you?
I'm also on Twitter and Instagram, but I'm not very good at remembering to post on Instagram, at Rach Krieger, no all. And I have a podcast with fellow comedian Philip Sutton. We all have podcasts. That's all anyone does now because of lockdown. Mm-hmm. But I have a podcast with fellow comedian Philip Simon. It's called Do You Talking to Me? Where we... I know it is a good title. Do You Talking to Me? Brilliant. My husband's came up with it, if I'm honest. It was his idea. But yeah, we chat to people of Jewish heritage from across the arts, media, and entertainment industry, lots of comics in there as well, about their lives, growing up, favorite foods, family feuds, that kind of thing. And we are just recording the fourth series virtually as we speak. Not literally, because it'd be weird to record two podcasts at the same time, unless you'd only invited Jews on. That would have been helpful. But Yeah, that's a bit fun. There's no religious content. Like, no one's going to come away from that being able to pass RE GCSE. It's a lot of fun. But there are some interesting celebi type people on it. So yeah, check that out. That's at Jew Talking on all the social media. No G, because like then it's not like Robert De Niro. Is it Robert De Niro? I never can remember who says it. You're talking to me. Is that
look
Robert
at
De Niro?
Our little faces. We want to commit to an answer, but we aren't sure.
I feel it's the sort of fact I should probably be aware
of.
Oh
yeah, that is
it is him. I've just gone through my Al Pacino Robert De Niro repertoire. I'm 90% sure it's him. Yeah.
All
God,
right.
That's terrible.
What an obscure end to the podcast. Tim, you are the winner because you kind of took us on an emotional journey.
I'm never going to question that. I wouldn't argue with that.
I've got to say, it was you made us feel things in a world where we were all a bit cold and sad. Thank you so much, everybody. Thanks to everybody for listening. This has been the Comedy Arcade and you are now free to go. So... thanks for listening to The Comedy Arcade. There'll be a new episode next Thursday with new balls and new guests. If you liked it, like us any way you can, and subscribe, and tell all your friends. Also, tell us. We're in all the usual places on all the social media. And if you didn't like it, I've been Sean Walsh, and this is What's Upset You Now. The USP is, it's only 15 minutes.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.